Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Andrew Hunneke. Our guest today is Ted McKinney, the CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, who joins us to talk about tariffs, the Farm Bill, and more. But first, here are this week's headlines. Overall grocery prices did not increase last month, according to the latest Consumer Price Index. Lower prices for pork, dairy products, and fruits and vegetables offset higher prices for eggs and beef. Egg prices continue to rise, up by more than 10% due to the ongoing bird flu outbreak. They are 59% higher than this time last year. USDA's Economic Research Service is predicting grocery prices will rise by more than 3% this year. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin says the administration will work to come up with a new rule defining waters of the United States in the Clean Water Act. Administrator Zeldin says the new definition will align with the policy from a 2023 Supreme Court decision. According to that definition, wetlands don't fall under federal regulation if they aren't attached to other bodies of water. Zeldin says EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers will work quickly to get a new rule written and that he does not expect there to be any delays during the process. And finally, Chinese retaliatory tariffs are now in effect on some American agricultural commodities. The tariffs came in response to President Trump's additional 10% tariff on Chinese goods. Some of the commodities affected include beef, sorghum, wheat, corn, and cotton. The president has already imposed some new tariffs on Canada and the European Union and plans to impose reciprocal tariffs next month. Ted McKinney is the CEO of NASDA. We asked him how tariffs are affecting American agriculture.
Well, I would say at minimum, there's a lot of nervousness out there up and down the entire food chain, certainly with farmers and ranchers, per your question. But we knew this. He had been talking about this at some level on the campaign trail. We've been told to buckle up, or I think the words used, or it might be a bit bumpy. And so we're starting to perhaps feel the bumps. My sense is, though, what we have to do is give the administration a little bit of time here. I can tell you straight away that trade is not fair out there. It is not fair and has not been fair to the U.S. Now, we're not perfect, but by and large, I think we really work hard or harder at keeping some sense of fair trade, honoring our commitments, that kind of thing. But clearly, with the president in his run to the presidency and now since inauguration, he's fulfilling what he said he would do. And so we're just going to have to take our sedatives and buckle up a couple extra times and see how it goes. But I do think he will take care of our farmers and ranchers. He did so in his first term. And I think there's a great anticipation if it gets too bumpy, which is likely, I would say, I hope he'll take care of our farmers and ranchers and by extension others down and up and down the food chain.
We do know that countries are either continuing to impose retaliatory tariffs or threatening to do that, depending on what the president does on a weekly basis. What commodities are most at risk from these retaliatory tariffs?
Well, I'll answer as best I can on the counter tariffs, and it just depends. Countries seem to choose those commodities that are prominent in congressional districts or states, if you're talking about senators, where they want hurt to be felt, impact to be felt. And that ranges across all crops, critters, wines, spirits, etc. And so I think based on what we're seeing as a draft list from the EU, much like they did the first time years ago, it'll be varied. And so that's probably by intent. Now, I think it's interesting that there's a counter tariff on spirits because, God love them, the EU and the US came to a zero for zero, no tariffs on each other agreement a few years ago, 1997, I think. But it is what it is. It's difficult times. Bumpy road is the description here. So let's just hope that it doesn't last too long. And if it does, we can protect our farmers.
We'll be back with more from NASDA CEO Ted McKinney right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who helped build the America we depend on, and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. A farm bill still needs to be written at some point this year. We asked NASDA CEO Ted McKinney about some of the priorities they would like to see addressed in the final bill.
For the sake of our farmers and our ranchers, I would say getting right, and whatever right is, would be the insurance portion. That is so valuable. When I was traipsing around the world, to be able to say, hey, our farmers put skin in the game with their insurance. And other countries do not. And so that was a very valuable point to raise. So I think that's one. I believe that something or some things will happen to the commodity titles. I'm thinking of reference prices, for example. So I think that's there. Very important in the Farm Bill is sustaining the trade promotion funds. That's for years and years, even decades, been known as the Market Access Program. We at NASDA just got the okay to go forward for this year with our MAP program, so good. All of the commodity groups, including NASDA, are enjoying and making very, very good use of the RAP programs, Regional Ag Product Promotion Programs. There's RAP 1 and RAP 2, and we're using those very well with a focus on diversifying our markets so we can enter and establish a foothold into new markets. Those have been very, very valuable. We hope those are left alone. And then there's always a good discussion, not so much a debate, but a good discussion on conservation. We have seen a lot of benefits from some of those funds, and whether those funds that came from the IRA, the Climate Smart Ag grants included among them, whether some level of that is embedded in the Farm Bill or not, I think farmers would say has been important. And I think it's been proven that they are improving their yields, improving their farms, their soils by doing so. So those are three. I would close on one other that's very important to NASDA. Animal disease. We're right in the middle of this incredible high path avian influenza effort. And so we've got to make sure that we're providing the funds to address not only high path avian flu in poultry, but also dairy. We now know that screwworm might be, well, it's in Mexico. It's not here in the U.S. yet. We've got to ward that off. Same with foot and mouth disease. African swine fever is not too far away in the Dominican Republic. So we've got to keep those diseases out or manage them if they're already here as best we can.
One of the big issues for this bill, if not the biggest issue, is a shortage of funding. How confident are you that that will get resolved?
If the president and the Congress are good for their word, that they care deeply about rural America, our farmers, our ranchers, and of course, by extension, if they do okay, so does the entire food value chain, then we'll hope that they'll deliver in a good farm bill. But so too, I think we're all studying our navels and deciding what's most important when asked and what priorities exist. And we are among those too. And we're feeding that in. That's why we were out in February as NASDA with our five top priorities. We share other priorities with members of the Congress and the executive branch. But let's just hope that if there are tariffs coming up that are shorting us or hurting us on some of our more traditional export markets, for goodness sake, give us the tools. Keep feeding us the tools that let us go open up new ones. That would sort of be, I think, NASDA's plea to the administration.
I would like to switch gears to WOTUS now. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin announced the agency will come up with a new rule that would align the definition of WOTUS with the 2023 Sackett decision. How important is it to get a definition that will stand for a while instead of being constantly challenged or blocked by the courts?
Read my lips. Very, very, very important. I've only done one op-ed in my time here at NASDA, and it was about WOTUS. and it was the overreach that was being exhibited by the then EPA, and it was categorically wrong. There's a lot of law at the Supreme Court level included that states pretty clearly, Sackett in the exception, where the feds have responsibility and where the states have responsibility. And that was a categorical, unmitigated overreach. So you can call us fans of this. Now, it's not written yet, so we better hold back a little bit till we see what it says. But I think the spirit of it is correct. It's a respect for the states and the good that farmers and ranchers and state governments and so many others in the states do to take care of water quality. So we are enthused. We had two people at that discussion yesterday. Couldn't be more pleased. Must pass. Get it done.
Ag Secretary Rollins already making a good impact here on her first couple weeks on the job. How do you expect the department to continue to change under her leadership?
She's dealt with agriculture and food in many roles. The think tank that she led in Texas. It's a more quiet one, but the Domestic Policy Council, which she eventually chaired, does deal with this stuff. It's more quiet behind the scenes, but she's done that. And then most importantly, she has the president's ear and he has hers. And we need that as much as anything else. If there's things she doesn't know, and I don't know what that might be, she has in and will surround herself with good people. We at NASDA couldn't be more pleased with all of the names she has put forward and the president have put forward for nominees for undersecretary or agency heads and the like, senior advisors, chiefs of staff, all of them. Just simply outstanding. High trust, proven track records.
NASDA CEO Ted McKinney, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
And thanks to you. Best to you.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion, but first, Lydia Johnson looks at which American ag commodities will be affected by China's retaliatory tariffs in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
President Donald Trump has increased duties on China twice since taking office less than 2 months ago. This week, China imposed retaliatory tariffs on more than $22 billion of agricultural exports. As you can see on this chart, soybeans accounted for nearly one half of U.S. agricultural exports to China, totaling over $12 billion in 2024. China is the world's largest soybean importer, accounting for nearly 60% of global trade and half of U.S. soybean export value. Grains are the second highest U.S. ag product imported to China, totaling a value of nearly $3 billion. Meat followed, valued at about $2.5 billion. The United States logged record export values to China for key ag commodities in 2021 and 2022. But China has been diversifying its sources for farm imports since. While the retaliatory duties will push a shock through the industry in the short term, some in the ag community are willing to accept the sting for long-term correction with trading partners. Oliver Ward has more in his story on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line, which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where this week's panel is going to focus on everything going on with the tariff situation and the ag economy. Joined this week by Scott Gerlt with the American Soybean Association and Roger Krein with the American Farm Bureau Federation. Thank you both gentlemen for joining us today. And Scott, I'd like to start with you first, sir. How do the markets look and what can farmers expect this year when it comes to the soybean side of things?
Yeah, markets are definitely in a much tougher situation. We've seen a pretty continual decline on the price side. Fortunately, we did have a little bit of a price rally during February timeframe, whenever crop insurance prices are set. But we've seen really, on the soy side specifically, prices continuing to fall. While input costs have remained pretty high. In some categories, we've seen a little bit of back off in those input prices. But really, when you put this together, we have quite a bit of margin squeeze. And so there really is a tricky situation for farmers managing their risk this year. Corn prices are a little better than soy, which is, you know, may move some acres up from soy to corn. But even then on the corn side, we're not really talking about profitability. We're really talking about managing the margins at that point.
I'd like to pivot to trade and tariffs now. President Trump has imposed some new tariffs and he plans to raise others next month as well. Scott, how is this uncertainty affecting farmers at the moment?
Yeah, the uncertainty around tariffs is adding a lot of price volatility. You know, there's not always much indication of the tariff amounts or when they're coming. Or the, you know, we also don't know the retaliation from other countries. And so really we've seen just a lot of swings in the market in response to these tariffs. You know, if you look at essentially who we're in a trade war with, Mexico, China, and Canada are our largest trade partners in the space. You put Mexico and China together on soybean exports, and you're at nearly three quarters of our export markets are putting tariffs potentially on U.S. soy. So it's really difficult to manage the risk. And farmers really should be looking closely at crop insurance options this year, locking in those prices from when we had the rally earlier this year, because it's hard to know what things are going to look like in a few months, whether trade will be flowing again or whether, you know, we're going to have reduced export opportunities at that point.
Roger, I'd like to bring you into the discussion now, sir. What sectors of the American farm economy are most at risk from retaliatory tariffs at this moment?
Well, a lot of them are. I mean, as Scott said, Mexico, Canada, China are three biggest markets, and 20% of U.S. farm production is exported. If you cut those markets off, our domestic markets just go into tanks. And the big ones that are going to be affected, soybeans and corn, beef, pork, and dairy, tree nuts, cotton, those are our biggest products selling in the world market. It's important that we have access to world markets.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable? They'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. We asked Roger Cryan with the American Farm Bureau Federation if there are farmers who could actually benefit from higher tariffs on imports.
There are some folks, especially some fruit and vegetable farmers, that are competing with imports. They could, in principle, benefit. This sort of whipsawing makes it tough to know how that's going to work. And, of course, one of the objectives of the trade negotiations in the first Trump administration was making better deals for American farmers and workers. So in the long term, I hope that we end up with a better outcome, benefits for everybody.
Scott, I'd like to bring you back into the discussion now, sir. Are these trade wars going to impact farmers' cost of production? We do import a lot of potash from Canada. Any manufacturers are worrying the tariffs will raise the cost of farm equipment with these.
Yeah. I do expect them to impact the cost of production. You know, you mentioned fertilizer, which is kind of the obvious example, but also farm equipment, you know, is oftentimes at least certain parts, or if not the whole piece of machinery is implemented or is manufactured across the border. So I think those are some of the obvious ways. But, you know, also interest rates, you know, could be affected here too on the cost of production side, as to the fact that tariffs are inflationary. Domestically, you know, that could spur, you know, the continued higher interest rates. Of course, it depends what happens on economic growth there as well. So I don't really see the tariffs really bringing down the cost of production much in any meaningful way, but very likely would further increase cost of production.
And I'd like to get both of your guys' thoughts here on this final question. Scott, we'll go ahead and start with you first, sir. You know, amongst all of this uncertainty, there is still a farm bill that needs to get written at some point this year. Funding for commodity programs remains to be a problem, though, for this bill. How does this get resolved?
Yeah, I don't think we fully know yet how this gets resolved. We obviously are in need of a farm bill update. I mean, especially now seeing what's happening with soybean prices. We're talking about soybean prices in the $9 range, and farmers losing potentially $100 an acre. You know, that's, we definitely need the new farm bill. What we saw with the proposals last year for the farm bill, we're essentially using the CCC to fund the Title I increases. I think this year there's going to be a lot potentially asked of CCC with the trade war. There's not necessarily, there's only about $4 billion, which isn't enough for trade aid payments at the moment. So I think that conversation gets a little bit trickier this year. So I think Congress is going to have to be creative in looking at this and how do we get the Title I to levels that are actually meaningful for farmers and can help them through this time.
And Roger, your thoughts as well, sir?
Well, we can't tell Congress where to find the money, but we know that more money is needed just to get the farm programs in the 2025 farm bill back to even with what was intended in 2018. And that 2018 farm bill is going to be 8 years old by the time the latest extension expires. And it's just selling farmers short to get another extension. And we're counting on solid bipartisan leadership in both ag committees. We're going to need all four of those folks to make a really solid effort to get this done. And we're looking forward to a solid result in 2025 in order to get farmers back into a position where their safety net can be counted on.
Well, certainly a lot to be paying attention to when it comes to trade, tariffs, and the farm economy here as we continue to move forward. Scott, Roger, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse newsmakers, but first, Lydia Johnson has an update on foreign farmland ownership by state in this week's Map It Out.
The percentage of foreign-owned farmland has increased by 85% since 2010, totaling nearly 46 million acres nationwide. However, foreign-owned land still represents just over 3.5% of total privately held agricultural land in the United States. Canada is the largest landholder, totaling about 1.2%. The Netherlands follows with about 0.4%, and China holds just a fraction of 0.1% of farmland in the U.S. This chart shows a change in foreign land ownership by state from 2022 to 2023. Green shows growth in foreign land ownership and blue indicates decline. New Mexico saw 350,000 acres purchased by foreign interests, the most of any state. Texas was second at 200,000 acres. Both increases are tied to new or expanded wind energy investments. South Carolina, Arkansas, and Oregon all saw increases that are linked to timber industry expansions. The overall increase in foreign-held acreage is largely due to renewable energy investments from European entities. Ownership by investors from nations like China, Iran, and Russia has decreased in recent years, according to recent Agricultural Foreign Investment Disclosure Act data that tracks the purchases. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line, which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Thanks for watching this week's episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Here's what's on the horizon for next week. Both the House and Senate are not in session. Next week is also National Ag Week, and Tuesday is National Ag Day. And Monday is our Ag and Food Policy Summit in Washington, D.C. We hope you join us to harvest perspectives on a wide variety of issues from our talented lineup of speakers. You can still join us online by registering on our website's events tab. We'll continue to follow all of the latest on ag and food policy issues from our website, agripulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Honecke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.